The world is full of magic and wonder, if you know where to look. And I'm obsessed with looking for it. I'm Simon Sinek, and I host a podcast called A Bit of Optimism. Each week, I have a short conversation with someone who inspires me or teaches me something about life, leadership, and other curious things. I hope you'll join me on the journey. Listen to A Bit of Optimism on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My simple solution to the problem was remove people from the scene and help them feel safer.
In response to attacks against Asian Americans, Maddie Park raised over $250,000 to donate cab rides to the Asian community.
There is so much more work to be done. We really need to come together and tackle this issue as a community.
Support the Asian community. Learn how at lovehasnolabels.com. Brought to you by Love Has No Labels and the Ad Council.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
Welcome to another episode of Strictly Business, the podcast in which we speak with some of the brightest minds working in the media business today. I'm Andrew Wallenstein with Variety. It was 10 years ago that Grandview Management was formed to focus on a client list of high-end writers and producers. Since then, the biz has been through a lot, to say the least. And the current day and age is no exception, as the TV business in particular navigates what you might call the post-peak TV era. To help illuminate the road ahead for the industry, I've enlisted Grandview principals Matt Rosen and Jeff Silver. We'll talk with them in just a moment.
Let's take a moment to breathe. Deep inhale. Extend your spine. Remain focused on what you're doing. If safe to do so, exhale slowly, leaning to one side. Inhale back to center. If safe to do so, exhale slowly to the opposite side. Find mental health resources at loveyourmindtoday.org. This message is brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ed Council.
What does optimism look like? I'm on a quest to find the people who inspire us to dream more and do more. I'm Simon Sinek, and I host a podcast called A Bit of Optimism. I talk to all sorts of people, from the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff to a hairdresser on Instagram who gives out free haircuts to the homeless, from the CEOs of the world's largest companies to the comedy writer who visited the wreckage of the Titanic. I love talking to leaders, artists, authors, and eccentrics about life, leadership, purpose, mental fitness, human skills, high performance, and other curious things. It leaves me feeling wiser, more inspired, and, well, more optimistic. Because after all, this is a bit of optimism. The world is full of magic and wonder, if you know where to look for it. Listen to A Bit of Optimism on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's The Breakfast Club, the world's most dangerous morning show.
Hey!
Angela Yee is kind of like the big sister that always pokes you in the forehead.
That's not how it goes?
That's not how anything goes.
Yimby's really like a robot. One of the best DJs ever.
Believe that.
Charlamagne is the wild card.
And I'm about to give somebody the credit they deserve for being stupid.
I know, that's right.
What is wrong with you?
Listen to The Breakfast Club weekday mornings from 6 to 10 on 106.7 The Beat. Columbus is real hip-hop and R&B.
And we're back with Matt Rosen and Jeff Silver of the management team Grandview. And they've got a client list filled with writers and producers of hit movies and TV shows like House of the Dragon, Ozark, Loki. Thanks for being with me today, guys.
Thanks so much for having us.
Hey, Andrew.
Thanks for having us.
So set the scene for me, if you will, as we speak here in late February in Los Angeles. We've gotten past the strikes. The streaming wars are ablaze. But you've been in the business quite a while. On the chaos to calm spectrum here in Hollywood, where do things sit right now? Matt, why don't you start us off?
Well, where do things sit right now? Coming out of the strike, I think there's a lot of people who are concerned looking at where peak TV is going. There's been many indications that it is going down, and that the amount of shows that were being made in the 500 to 600 range are going to be cut almost in half. And at the same time, the movie business is trying to figure out ways to get back to a better box office from the years past. And so there are people concerned out there. That all said, I think from our viewpoint, we're pretty optimistic about the opportunities for our clients in this changing landscape, and feel very fortunate to represent some extremely talented people in writers and directors and so on, and feel that the opportunity is ripe for them to continue to be able to produce content at the highest level.
All right. So, right off the bat, though, I would think the simplistic take would be, now, wait a second, you just did some scary math, because less product to be made means less opportunity for your clients. So, why, Jeff, why be optimistic?
Well, listen, we were both in the business in 2007, 2008, right? Matt and I started as assistants together at CAA. We met each other my first day, his third week. And, 2006 felt like a great time. And suddenly you had a strike and then you had a financial meltdown. And we were lucky enough at that moment to be young in the business. Matt was on agent track at CAA and I was working as an executive. But we really felt it, right? We felt the business screech to a halt. And then we felt this existential crisis in 2008 of what's going to happen. I remember going up for a job at Paramount to be a CE in 2009, and I was one of 300 qualified candidates for that job. So to your point, Andrew, right, less opportunity is really scary. That said, we're in a business of entrepreneurs and we're in a business of creatives. And if you fuse those two together, you get storytellers of the highest level who figure out a way to get their stories told. So we're maybe uniquely confident in the ability of our clients to get their stories out there in the right way. So yes, there are going to be less open writing assignments. We've seen that. There's going to be less slots. But 3 months ago, I think people were looking at FX and Hulu and saying, are they going to be bringing in new development? And right now, you've just had John Landgraf, who we have a ton of respect for and business with, talk about wanting new shows. Our friends at Hulu now want new shows. So we're starting to see a rebound already. It's always a scary moment when supply and demand get a little bit screwed up. But if you're the kind of artist who just waits for books to come in your way or assignments to come in your way, yeah, it's time to rethink how you do things. But if you're the kind of artist that has a vision and has stories to tell, then we think you're as well suited now as you were before.
Okay. So I guess when you've got clients like, to name a few of your people, Ryan Condal, who is the showrunner on House of the Dragon, and you've got Chris Mundy, who is coming off of Ozark. You've got some great names, and they're going to get jobs. What about the? I guess what I'm saying is, for the rest of the marketplace, if you don't have the best names, what do you do? Or should the broader marketplace, is this going to be a troubling time? Is it only the cream of the crop that's going to survive?
I'm happy to jump in. I mean, I don't think it's just the cream of the crop. This is Jeff. Matt and I have talked about this a lot. We don't think it's just the cream of the crop. We think if you have an intrepid idea, and you've got a career and you've got a reputation and you know how to work well with others and you've proven yourself in some way, people are going to want to listen to your idea and want to say, does this fit on our air? Is this something that we can do? And if you're young coming up in the business with nothing to lose and only a dream, right? Then you're saying, great, I just graduated from this playwrights program, or I've got this one pilot. I'm not that expensive. Come in and take me seriously. Where you always see attrition in these moments, I think, is in the middle, right? So for those folks, writers, filmmakers, actors, producers, anybody in media who's sort of been resting on their laurels for a bit and waiting for it to come to them, it gets a little bit harder. But if you're ready to play offense with your ideas, we think it doesn't matter what level you're at.
Matt, how else would you characterize this marketplace? How does it change now?
Look, I think what you're going to start seeing, I hit it a little bit before, but you're going to be seeing less shows, but you're going to be seeing more eyeballs on those shows. And that is going to lead to more cultural moments for us as a community, right? Everyone is going to be joining and watching the same types of shows, similar to maybe the way it was back in, you know, in the days before there was just so much television. Now there's so much opportunity to look at so many different things. You don't know what option to pick. And it's going to bring people together in a really cool way. And being able to watch things in a way that you get back into the office on Monday and everyone sit around the water cooler and be having conversations about watching the same thing finally again.
I'm going to push back on that. I feel like, you know, you mentioned earlier that you think that we could see maybe half of the volume of shows, but I think the estimates I've seen are it's going to come down a good amount. I don't know about half, and we still got a lot of streaming services out there. I think it's not necessarily going to be that much less fragmented a world. So do you really think we're going to go back to the days where, you know, a Game of Thrones is going to have, you know, 30 million viewers coming to a finale? Do you really think it's going to be that dramatic a difference?
I don't think it's going to get back to, you know, the 80s or the 90s, you know, when it was just network TV, really. But I think you're going to have more touch points for people because there's going to be less options. There's going to be amazing shows out there, to Jeff's point. I think he makes a really good point, you know. People are going to rise to the top with their fantastic ideas. And as long as you're playing offense, you're going to be having really good content out there. And you're going to be able to get your shows on the air. I do feel that there will be some change in the market in the amount of shows that we're seeing out there.
It's also, Andrew, it's up to all of us in the business to find and nurture storytellers and find and nurture ideas that have stories that cut through, right? I mean, it's not 30 million a year, but you look at shows like Yellowstone, right? They're bringing in big numbers. And then shows that, you know, Beef, which, you know, it's Sonny Lee wrote and came up with an amazing idea from his life. And our partner Ben works with Sonny, and we're fortunate enough at Grandview to work with most of the writers and directors on Beef. Like, that, we don't have the exact data from Netflix on that, but that show really cut through in a massive way and was a big success for them, critically and commercially. So it might, to Matt's point, it might not be what it was 20 years ago with 30 million, but buyers are still going to want eyeballs, and advertisers, as we head towards this place in streaming when there's more advertising, are going to want as many eyeballs as they can get. That those fundamentals of the business are not going to change.
Jeff, you mentioned data. Let's go on a bit of a tangent there. How do you as a management company deal in this asymmetrical world of data where you're got streaming services that have, you know, armloads of data, and sure, you know, every once in a while Netflix comes along and, you know, throws a whole bunch of data out there and says, see, no, we share plenty. But by and large, it feels like representatives like yourselves seem to be operating at a big disadvantage.
Well, it depends, right? Again, everything goes in cycles. So in the beginning of Netflix and making so much content, we had many filmmakers and showrunners who wanted to go there because they felt that they were great creative partners. And the money was really good, right? Those deals were very, very significant. Early on, through a couple of years ago, those deals were very top of market. And the executives at Netflix were excellent at saying to the creatives, we're here to make your shows. That's what we're here for. Obviously, there's now been a trend where people have been asking to see more data, and as deals are coming down a little bit in terms of financials and length and general comp, yeah, that has become an issue. So we're glad we're getting some of the data. Ultimately, what our role is with an artist is to help them architect a strategy to get them what they want in their career, right? So for us, it's about picking who are the people that are going to help them put the best show on the air. Who are the people that can help them make the best deal around that show? Who are the best collaborators? And how do we build something really long lasting? So data matters when you get granular on deal making. There's no question about that. But when it comes to how do I create something I'm really proud of and go, Molly, as an example, Molly Smith Metzler, who we've looked after for a long time, had an incredible first show called Made. It was the first time she developed, and she developed with Lucky Chap and John Wells and made that show at Netflix. And it was nominated for a bunch of awards. And Molly now has just gotten Sirens greenlit, which Variety broke a few days ago. It's the second show she's ever developed. So she's 2 for 2 on development. But for us, it was Molly's in a deal with Netflix that is a fantastic deal. We teamed her back up with Lucky Chap because she felt so comfortable with them. We made sure that the material was great. And we made sure that she and Ginny Howe, who's a tremendous executive at Netflix, were in sync together. And now they're going to go tell another amazing story. And I'm so excited for everyone to be able to see that story at some point next year. So again, the data matters, but for getting artists where they want to be, it's not everything. It's one thing.
Okay. Speaking of the financials, Matt, what's it like nowadays when you're talking to your clients about what the writers or producers of yesteryear could hope to make from being a showrunner versus today, given the clout that, you know, the streaming services have, given the way, you know, back end deals or the lack thereof are structured, is it just not as lucrative as it used to be?
I think it can still be a very lucrative business. The pie might have gotten a little bit smaller, right? As you turned analog dollars into digital cents. But, you know, as long as you are talented and as long as you are able to be on the offense and go sell product or sell your project in a competitive landscape, which is what we really try to do with all of our clients, is to make sure that there is a competitive situation. And that is more important than ever to help make sure that our clients can be making a good, fair deal that is, you know, going to be super beneficial to them. And, you know, to your question on the back end, look, obviously we the data has helped us, you know, Netflix's transparency especially has helped us in helping our clients along with their lawyers and agents make better deals for them. And the landscape is going to continue to change over the next, you know, as everything gets reset over the next 12 to 18 months, let's say. But as long as there is a competitive market and as long as there are stories that the buyers want, which we feel very fortunate to represent people that are in those positions, we're not seeing a major downward trend in what our clients are making.
I think that's really well said. Andrew, just to double underline what Matt said about competitive, when you're working with an artist, what you hope for lots of things. You hope for process wins. You hope that they are really happy with the stories they've told. You hope that they feel like the placement of those stories has really worked. But in the inception of those stories, you want multiple people getting excited about them, right? So we're out with something right now that we haven't reported on yet, where we've got several studios bidding on a piece for two clients of ours, a showrunner and producer around a company that we're building right now. And we started this conversation and we had 4 different studios bidding on it. And now we're down to 2. This was just an article and a writer with an idea, but it's something that really resonates and cut through. And the deal that we're making is incredibly cutting edge, incredibly elegant, but they're going to walk away with a chance to do very, very, very well. And if they hit it out of the park, they potentially will make more money on this show than they would have if they'd set this up several years ago. So the ways that we're making deals are evolving, but you need to have an idea or a package that multiple buyers want so that you can really get under the hood and make an aggressive deal for your clients. The one-off open writing assignment at a studio or network, you're absolutely right. Those numbers are going down a bit. So we're trying to get all of our storytellers and artists to play offense.
We'll be back in just a moment with more with Matt Rosen and Jeff Silver.
My simple solution to the problem was remove people from the scene and help them feel safer.
In response to attacks against Asian Americans, Maddie Park raised over $250,000 to donate cab rides to the Asian community.
There is so much more work to be done. We really need to come together and tackle this issue as a community.
Support the Asian community. Learn how at lovehasnolabels.com. Brought to you by Love Has No Labels and the Ad Council.
What does optimism look like? I'm on a quest to find the people who inspire us to dream more and do more. I'm Simon Sinek, and I host a podcast called A Bit of Optimism. I talk to all sorts of people, from the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff to a hairdresser on Instagram who gives out free haircuts to the homeless, from the CEOs of the world's largest companies to the comedy writer who visited the wreckage of the Titanic. I love talking to leaders, artists, authors, and eccentrics about life, leadership, purpose, mental fitness, human skills, high performance, and other curious things. It leaves me feeling wiser, more inspired, and, well, more optimistic. Because after all, this is a bit of optimism. The world is full of magic and wonder, if you know where to look for it. Listen to A Bit of Optimism on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, it's Zuko and Kayla from The Wake Up Call. Enjoy your podcast, and when you're done, don't forget about us. We have a radio show. We try to bring a smile to your face every morning.
We also talk to some of the hottest country stars of today, and we like to share some good news with That's What I Like.
Because Lord knows that's hard to find. When you're done podcasting your podcast, listen to us at 92.3 WCOL.
Set your preset on your radio right now, and don't forget you can listen to us online on the iHeartRadio app.
And we are back with the principals at Grandview Management, Matt Rosen and Jeff Silver. Guys, I guess I'm surprised to hear that we're not hearing the people that you are negotiating with plead poverty more often, because I would assume after, you know, the strikes and after, you know, the streaming services, you know, leaning more into needing to demonstrate profitability, that they'd be all tapped out. They'd be, you know, not being able to spend top dollar anymore. But I feel like that's not what I'm hearing. So what's going on?
I mean, just to jump in, this is Matt. I feel like we, Jeff and I, have found ourselves in a very fortunate position. We started this company 10 years ago. You know, we were best friends coming up, meeting at the agency, and we were able to hone in and just learn a lot over the years before we started the company. And what we feel very blessed about is that having built this company based on a culture, the culture is our strategy, and being able to bring in artists and have them help, or helping them create ideas, pitches, and then help them create a market out there with packaging that with our agency partners. We've been able to stay above the fray when it comes to, you know, the quote unquote economic downturn, which, it, you know, people are crying poverty on, to your, what you just said, Andrew. We feel very fortunate to represent people who are at the top of their game. And whether that is a showrunner on a massive hit TV show, or, you know, someone that we just discovered, you know, out of the UK, or you know, right out of grad school, we like to consider ourselves the best in the game when it comes to identifying talent and making sure that talent is ultra successful in the marketplace.
Now, are we going to see, though, you know, I remember there was a time, maybe it was always this time and I'm just forgetting, but like, you know, networks would seize on a talent. I think of, like, you know, sort of like the Chuck Lorre model, where it's like they find the talent, and then that talent in a matter of years will go from one project to two projects to nine projects, you know, where they become an empire unto themselves. Are we going to see those type of people rise up rather quickly? Is that next generation, do you think, gonna emerge soon enough?
It's a great question. I mean, listen, I think you could, one of the things that you might be able to say about peak TV is that there were too many shows. And in those too many shows, there maybe were too many showrunners. And some of those shows really buckled under the weight of expectations, financial or otherwise, because the shows weren't at a certain level of quality, right? And I think that's something that people were experiencing during peak TV, this sort of fatigue around, are the shows great? So will there be more Chuck Lorre's, more Ryan Murphy's, more Shonda's? Absolutely. Will it be a meritocracy? We think so. Will you just be given a show because so many networks have so many hours that they're now needing to fill? No, it's going to be harder. As always, the great people with great motivation and great talent and great character and great ambition will be that new class for sure. It's just going to be a little bit tougher. And that's maybe okay for a minute so that we can find the quality that we need to keep cutting through a marketplace where people are looking at things on second screen and have lots of different opportunities to do. Like we're traditionalists in the sense that we want people watching great shows. We want people going to great films. So to answer your question, Andrew, yes, there will still be those people, but we think that the people who get to those lofty heights, there'll be less of a chance. But if you have that combination of skill and motivation and character, you can get there.
And I remember people like Bill Lawrence, Scrubs executive producer, a lot of great shows as well, voicing concerns during the strike that the next generation of producers were not going to be able to be trained and brought up in a system that was going to groom them to really be ready to take on being able to show run. Do you think we're coming out of the strike with a system that is going to equip them to do that? Do you worry that for your clients who might fit needing that grooming, that they're going to be ready to take that mantle?
That is a great question, Andrew. The answer is yes. We do think they're going to be ready. And just to further your point, you know, I think a lot of the concerns coming out of some of these older showrunners is that you're cutting down from 22 episodes of network to 10 episodes of premium, you know, streaming. And it was just giving people less experience, and that people, writers were moving too quickly through the ranks and going from a staff writer to a co-executive producer in a matter of a couple years, where it used to take, you know, 10 plus years. What has happened is that there is now a new subset of non-writing executive producers that are, you know, helping these, you know, potentially younger showrunners. And we are very instrumental with our clients in helping select them and make sure that there is someone helping them, especially on their first shows. These shows are big shows. You know, you're a writer and you're coming in, and all of a sudden you're being asked to run, you know, essentially a company for that's, you know, costs tens of millions of dollars and run hundreds of people and be the CEO of that company. That's not something that someone can do by themselves. And it is a team oriented job in the same way that what Jeff and I do is a team oriented representation. You know, everyone at this company helps each other's clients. We make sure that we're helping each other and we're communicating, making sure that there's transparency in everything so that we can help our clients rise. And in the same way with our showrunners, they need that help and they need partners, which we help them find to make sure that they're going to be successful.
I think that's so well said. The only other thing I'd add to that, Andrew, is going back to your previous question, like the Shondas and the Chucks and the Ryans and the sort of, you know, real aspirational heavyweights there got there by identifying who their people are and by being mentors themselves. So I think a lot of what our job is to figure out, sometimes you've got an artist who just wants to tell a story. They just want to tell a story and they want to tell that story to the fullest. And they don't want to think about touching anything else while they're telling that story, and go from the ideas in my head to I'm accepting an Emmy on stage. And that's great. We love those people and they're wonderful, but they also know that they are more one project to one project. And that's totally okay. That's part of their artistic expression. There's some who say, you know what? I want to juggle multiple things at once. It will make all these things better and I will feel satiated in different ways. And if we can help those people find their people, find their younger writers who are going to be their showrunners, find their non-writing EPs they want to partner with, maybe find a non-writing EP they want to start a company with, so that you've got a tremendous showrunner and a non-writing EP together with the same mission, which is how do we lift other people up and tell their stories? So we always are on guard for bad mentorship. There's nothing worse than putting a great idea with a bad producer. It's absolutely brutal. It slows everything down and you're fighting up against the tide the entire way. So if you collaborate in the right way, the mentorship part gets taken care of.
So now I want you to look across the negotiation table and size up the field of buyers out there. It's a long list. I think it's almost surprising here we are in February 2024 and the list is that long. The speculation, of course, is that that list is going to winnow any day, but we've been saying that for a long time, too. What do you think is going to happen? And I'm not even just saying, you know, is it going to winnow? Is it going to not? But when you look at the list of buyers, what do you see right now in terms of the market? Is this a discerning list? Do you feel like you have a clear sense of what buyers want even? Do they have distinct identities, distinct set of needs? What do you think?
Well, Andrew, I'm so curious to hear your thoughts on this because you've been reporting on this and looking at this for a long time. To your point, we've all been sort of looking at the guillotine about to come down on all these different networks. What have you seen and heard in your travels? How come you don't think that's happened yet?
Well, my skeptical take is that obviously all eyes are on Paramount right now. And my feeling is that it's not going to happen anytime soon. And that there's probably regulatory issues that are at play here, and that maybe this is not going to be so easily done, and that perhaps maybe this is something like they need to figure out who's going to be in the White House by the end of the year first. That maybe you know, there could be a whole host of reasons, and that this isn't maybe necessarily as simple as just Paramount. And so, again, though, I my question really isn't just about like, oh, there'll be one less buyer out there. I'm really more curious about like, you know, there was a time where it just seemed like all these guys were just sort of like gobbling up product indiscriminately. Now it even feels like everyone's just focused on sports. So I guess I'm just trying to get a sense of, you know, how you see it.
All you can ask from your strategic partners and buyers is for honesty and transparency, right? As managers, agents, lawyers, producers, as people in the creative process and in this arena, all we can ask from the folks who are running these places are, tell us what you can do. Tell us what you can't do. Tell us what you will do. Tell us what you won't do. And then let us help get the right ideas with the right people to you. So the folks who are greenlighting these shows, for the most part, are not the ones who are making the bigger M&A decisions. Those decisions are coming down from a different level, right? For us, all we need are for the people who are actually greenlighting shows or not greenlighting shows to be able to be real and honest with us so we can be real and honest with the people that we work with, so that we can deliver them something. Or if they're in a place where they can't buy anything for 6 weeks, we say, great, we'll talk to you in 6 weeks. If that changes, let us know, just so we can have an active picture of what the market is. I'd say, Matt, I'm curious to hear what you would say. I think right now what we're getting from all the buyers is bring us specific things in specific buckets because we're open.
Yeah, I think that, look, this entire business, you know, is cyclical like every other business. And we are in the middle of a down cycle. But that does not mean that content stops being bought and made. And to Jeff's point, as long as we have solid partners on the buying side that are letting us know what they're looking for, and sometimes they don't know all the answers because, you know, upstairs in whatever C-suite of corporate, they're trying to figure out how to you know, get the right answers and looking at data and all this stuff that honestly, at the end of the day, may or may not matter. What matters is that we represent people who come up with unique and different ideas than what is currently in the market. And that excites the buyers. And we feel really fortunate about it. You know, we, you know, are able to kind of change the tide when things may be in a downturn right before the strike. You know, we went out with a pitch that was, you know, as everyone was shutting down, you know, we went out with a pitch on a fascinating idea from this writer out of the UK, and there was a 5-way bidding war on it. Because it was just different and unique, and it was this really cool comedy, and everyone had no one had ever seen it before. And that's why we feel really fortunate. And to your point, your question for Andrew, we do feel optimistic because we're seeing the results.
Last question. Here we are again in late February. There used to be a time where there was this very, you know, clear calendar, clear rhythms to the TV market. What sense, though, do you have now in this, you know, world where, you know, the traditional fall schedule is probably gone for good? You know, as you look to March, you know, and beyond, how do you sort of get your bearings, and what do you expect, you know, the spring to bring in terms of development, and how, whether it's linear networks or streaming, do you, what do you expect lies ahead?
I think we anticipate it to be year round. We anticipate, you know, the market to be opened all the time and for people to be wanting to purchase nonstop. And the days, to your point of upfronts in May and finding out, you know, what was going to be on the schedule for that fall, those, you know, still exist to a certain extent, but those days are over and it is a 24/7 game. And you know, our clients are, you know, advised and always moving with us in the mentality that we're creating a market every day because we are coming up with our clients and helping them develop quality content that they're going to be able to sell to multiple buyers. And by the way, some of the buyers may not be buying to Jeff's point at one moment or another, but there is always a market for content, especially if it is new and cutting edge and different and innovative.
And there might be an opportunity for broadcast network at this moment. I mean, I think everyone has been so focused on streamers and the growth of streamers and SVOD and what's happening there. And I think broadcast television has maybe gotten a little bit lost in the shuffle there. So I think our eyes are on the broadcasters to say, you know, what are you guys going to do? And can you make content that does cut through in a real way? And if so, maybe we go back to that calendar in some way.
Just to add on to that, because it's a really interesting point what Jeff brought up, but you're also seeing a lot of the streamers now trying to create their own network plus content, if you will. And so you're starting to see the migration of some of the network players that usually in the writing space would be working, you know, at one of the big three networks, actually migrating to the streaming platforms.
Well, can't think of a more hopeful note to end on than hope for the broadcast networks. But thank you both for your time. Good luck pitching for the rest of this season.
Thank you, Andrew.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to leave us a review at Apple Podcasts and Amazon Music. We love to hear from listeners. Please go to Variety.com to sign up for the free weekly Strictly Business newsletter. And don't forget to tune in next week for another episode of Strictly Business.
The world is full of magic and wonder, if you know where to look. And I'm obsessed with looking for it. I'm Simon Sinek, and I host a podcast called A Bit of Optimism. Each week, I have a short conversation with someone who inspires me or teaches me something about life, leadership, and other curious things. I hope you'll join me on the journey. Listen to A Bit of Optimism on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My simple solution to the problem was remove people from the scene and help them feel safer.
In response to attacks against Asian Americans, Maddie Park raised over $250,000 to donate cab rides to the Asian community.
There is so much more work to be done. We really need to come together and tackle this issue as a community.
Support the Asian community. Learn how at lovehasnolabels.com. Brought to you by Love Has No Labels and the Ad Council.